Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And yes, it is Wednesday, January 2nd, 2019. Welcome back, everyone. I hope you had a very safe January 1st coming into the new year. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, Melody, and Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year to you, too. And it's just one volatile year after another, and I think this is going to be even more so for 2019. But so let's go ahead. We have Wendy Wilson joining us today from Apothecary Herbs. So I do believe I need to move on with the market report. And, I mean, we had – the Dow was down, what, 400 points early, an early morning trade. Yeah. And so big swings once again today. Gold did hold on to its 1283 level. We were 1288 for a high. Gold is basically in the New York spot price after market is basically holding at 1283. Silver was up a penny at 1558. Platinum was down a dollar at 798, with palladium down three at 1274. The USDX today was up 0.71 at 96.79. Crude oil was up 119 at 46.60. And the paper markets today, so you have the Dow up 18 points. at 23,346. The Dow is up 30 at 6,694. 6,665.94. And the Dow, the S&P was up 3 at 2510. 10-year yield 2.66. That's an incredible how, you know, how that has dropped in just the past month. The euro was holding at 113. European and Asia markets were pretty flat. And so a strange trading day for the first day back of the new year. So we'll talk about this here after the first segment of the program today. First, we have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. Happy New Year, Wendy.
Happy New Year, Melody, and Happy New Year, Dave.
Happy New Year, Wendy.
Oh, I thought I'd talk about this new report coming out of the UK where we've got a surprise announcement. Scientists there, top officials in the UK from their health division are very concerned, and they see an end to modern medicine. And I was like, say what? Anyway, this report is regarding drug-resistant antibiotic bacteria and infections that are kind of out of control now, to the point they're saying that it's a global health threat, and they said it is the end of modern medicine. I seem to think this may be a little bit of an overreaction, but according to Dr. Sally Davies, she's the chief medical officer at the UK, she released her official warning that with escalating risk of massive death from bacterial infections, and they have no drugs that can stop it. So she is urging the global medical community to band together to find a solution or face a massive die-off of what she says 10 million people within the next 30 years. So according to also editor Elsie Andrews of the IFL Science report, she said modern medicine has really dropped the ball when it comes to protecting the population from deadly bacteria. In her report, she said in the United States, 2 million infected with antibiotic-resistant bacteria and 23,000 people die from it each year. But get this, many of these infections were acquired when people were admitted to hospitals. Now, on the global scale, she says there's 700,000 people infected. She's also reporting that even extreme antibiotic doses of 1,000 milligrams doesn't do anything. Wow. I didn't know you could give 1,000 milligrams. Yeah. But anyway, she said lab tests also show that when they put this drug-resistant bacteria in a petri dish, the infection has spread by 100% complete within 11 days. So it's fast spreading. A medicine doesn't have anything, any tools to stop it, and usually patients die pretty quickly. Here's a quote from Sally Davis. She says, "We really are facing, if we don't take action now, of a dreadful post-antibiotic apocalypse. So when antibiotics lose their effectiveness, it will spell the end of modern medicine." End of quote. And why do you suppose they're saying that? You want to take a guess? That it's the end of modern medicine and having no new antibiotics here.
Dave, you got a...
I can only imagine that, you know, disease-resistant bacteria, the rise of that. That's the only thing that comes to my mind at the moment.
Well, actually, it will really shut down surgery. Okay. According to Dr. Davey, she says, if medicine has no antibiotics to fight bacterial infection, that common surgical procedures would become too dangerous. She said procedures like cesarean sections, tonsillectomies, cancer treatments, knee and hip replacements would become less frequent. Invasive procedures offer a lot of risk of infection, and patients and doctors probably won't want to take that risk. She also says that organ transplants would be a thing of the past. They said bacterial infections now have become more dangerous than getting cancer, she said.
Wow.
Did anybody hear this on the main media channel? I mean, hello?
Who listens to that anymore? But anyway.
Well, and it's really interesting because they've got together and they've met in Berlin. The health authorities got together in Berlin.
In Maryland?
Berlin.
Maryland? Berlin, Maryland?
No. Okay. Germany.
Okay.
And they set up a map room. They have a projected map room tracking the spread of this death by these bacterial infections that they can't stop. They call it the superbug map, of course. And scientific medicine says really, they're really apologetic, actually, in some instances. They say, we've levied this threat on mankind knowingly since the 1940s when we confirmed then that bacteria becomes resistant to the antibiotics. So here's a quote from, again, Dr. Sally Davies, chief medical officer in the UK. She says, when people die of these infections, family members just think their loved one died of an uncontrolled infection. And this is a serious issue, and it is causing death. The subject is hidden from public view, or they would be up in arms. It will only get worse unless immediate action is taken now. So this is why it's kind of like, you know, not all over your media, is because, you know, people are just not going to go to the hospital, say.
Interesting.
So, yeah,
and they wouldn't be able to steal from them or charge them.
Right. Well, and according to many health experts, the problem with the drug-resistant bacterial infection is really because of uneducated use of antibiotics by doctors. Okay, so the history has shown that 1 out of 3 prescriptions, antibiotic prescriptions, was really for a condition that didn't require an antibiotic. Also, the overuse of antibiotics has been exploited tenfold in treating animals. There's an estimated 70% of the antibiotics that are made, they're used by United States farms, animal husbandry. So 70% of the antibiotics go to the farms that are raising food for people. And so the FDA has actually kind of cut down on the use of drugs when the animals are young, and only in extreme cases to use them. But a Swedish study actually reported by Biomed Central in June of 2009, they found a bunch of vancomycin-resistant bacteria in their sewage wastewater, which they use as fertilizer. So you got a lot of these drug-resistant bacteria on human food sources and now inside of it. And 80% of the fertilizer samples contained a lot of drug-resistant strains of bacteria. So spreading it around on the crops. And a lot of this microbacterial infection, is in our farms, thanks to modern medicine and the overuse of this stuff. So the UN Foundation is researching the bacterial threat, and they have constructed some sort of global action plan as part of their ability to help educate and reduce the use of antibiotics. They went out and said, World Health Organization said September 2017, antibiotics are running out and new drugs to replace them. No new drugs to replace them. So, and one of the problems, according to an antibiotic expert with Peer Charitable Trusts, her name is Kathy Talkington, she said Brazil and China and India and other countries where antibiotics are really doled out for use from anything from headaches, fatigue to childbirth have also created this bona fide drug resistant problem all worldwide. So it's not just the United States. It's, you know, it's just there. And when you look at the pillars of medicine, though, the pillar, the medicine's house is upheld by autonomy, or I'm sorry, anatomy, diagnostics, drug therapy, and surgery. So even though there are different categories of drugs, and some of them all outsell antibiotics, it is the mode of treatment done in healthcare which exposes patients to the bacterial infections, and that's the problem. So although antibiotics has really helped save people down through the years from things like tuberculosis and pneumonia and syphilis and a host of other health problems, the overuse has left us now with a much more dangerous threat. And according to the health experts, without effective antibiotics to fill in the gaps, no one's going to feel safe entering a hospital where germs spread. I mean, really, if you knew medicine didn't have any antibiotics, should you get a bacterial infection, would you go for elective surgery? No, you probably wouldn't.
No, but I have another question, too. I mean, bacteria in hospitals anymore. I mean, there's creations of, I mean, I know someone who went to, had a hip replacement done in a hospital where they have no air vents. It is, you know, where they don't have these infections. They don't have the bacteria. And it's, you know, it's not your normal hospital where all of us go to, of course, that, you know, we're at risk. So can the hospitals start spending a little bit of money and improving?
Right. They could. And not all bacteria is airborne. A lot of it's transferred. I read a report. One of the most infected items in a hospital was the partition, that little shower curtain they pull between beds to section off patients. That is totally infected with bacteria. Doctors and nurses touch that all the time. Then they touch the bed rail and they touch you.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's being spread that way. And here's the thing that's really quite shocking is, in desperation to kill the bacterial infections, doctors are giving their patients an antibiotic cocktail of not one, two, or three antibiotics, but 12.
Good grief. 12,
yeah, 12 to try to kill the infection. Now, what experts are looking at with all these maps, they're looking at also rationing antibiotics, but they said the loss of life from infections like this is going to present an economic loss of $3 trillion by 2030. And a lot of scientists aren't grasping that science isn't going to be able to keep up even with the evolving bacteria. So even if they come out with two or three antibiotics that seem to tamp this down, how are they going to keep up with that those bugs being resistant to those antibiotics within probably less than 2 years? So the problem, as it currently stands, there's not enough drugs. According to Kathy, she says a dozen antibiotics used to treat gram-negative bacteria is not enough. The drug response needs to match the threat. And the United States, what we're doing, some people say, well, what are we doing here in the old US of A? Well, in 2015, President Obama issued an antibiotic-resistant action plan that cost us $1 billion. And Trump has continued to fund this research, and Congress actually boosted the budget for funding it. The FDA has, again, prohibited the use of antibiotics for livestock growth and also in food-producing animals, and that's declined somewhat since 2009. So they're kind of not using as much. And tens of millions of dollars is really going into this problem to create new antibiotics They actually, you want to ask me how many they're creating? Go ahead and ask me.
How many are they? Oh, in unison.
Yes.
How many are they creating?
Okay. Tens of millions of dollars have come up with 8 new categories of antibiotics. And 20 nations have pledged to work towards replenishing the shelves full of antibiotics. No regulations have been issued to restrict the use of antibiotics, especially in countries like China and India. And since bacteria travels globally now, other countries, what they're doing with respect to bacterial infections is going to impact the globe. So my question is adding more antibiotics really going to be the answer to this problem? Science really has no idea. If they add, let's say, 20 new different antibiotics, they have no idea what that impact's going to be down the road.
Hmm.
So you have to ask yourself, will antibiotic-resistant bacteria and the lack of prescribed medication be medicine's Achilles heel? It may be, but I think it may be a combination of things. Maybe that and an economic collapse. But if you do believe the Lord and you believe Scripture, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty. And if you believe God's promise, his medicinal herbs are safe. They're here for the service of man and the healing of the nations. Those drug-resistant bacteria aren't resistant to herbs and your immune system. Never forget that. So I would, and personally, my response is I would power up the immune system to work. Also, the Journal of Nutrition published a study that showed that immune-enhancing herbs, like garlic, help your immune system maintain its balance in an efficient function to kill germ killer. It manufactures more germ killers and kills all this gram-positive or negative bacteria. So keep that immune system healthy, guys. That's my advice.
All right. Sounds like a great plan. Why don't you give out your contact information, Wendy, so the listeners can
absolutely
find the ways to do so.
Yeah, we have a free product catalog. Just call the toll-free number, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. Or jump on the website, thepowerherbs.com. And if you have questions, just give us a call.
All righty. Appreciate it, Wendy. Give us that info once again, because you have 10 seconds.
Call Apothecary Herbs, 866-229-3663. 866-229-3663. That's toll free in the United States and Canada, or visit thepowerherbs.com.
All righty. Thank you, Wendy. Always appreciate you being here and the great information for the listeners. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, right after these few short messages.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. And you know, it was interesting. I don't know if we have something about this in our report today, but there was Trump came out today, excuse me, and said there was a stock market glitch in December. That's all it was, ladies and gentlemen, a glitch. And it's going to rise when these trade deals are fixed. And he says we're up about 30% from the time he was elected. President Trump says it's going to go up once we settle trade issues and a couple of other things happen. I wonder what those couple of other things happen, you know. Open up the faucets for the plunge protection team. I guess that's one of them.
There you go. Get back to us when the government reopens.
So again, all they call it is a glitch, and in the stock market, no big deal. Equities are going to completely recover and go higher, and our country is doing by far better than any country in the world. We're the talk of the world, he said. We had a glitch. I don't know if there was anything else worth repeating on that, but you know, it's you know, and we did talk about this and I don't want to say that it was a glitch, but we did the SEC did order that creation of the consolidated audit trail in 2012 and a data warehouse to track all U.S. stock and option orders. That was actually launched in the middle of November. So, you know, I don't believe that's what it was. But he's coming out and saying it was a glitch. There was a Wall Street Journal article on that back in November 14th, and it said the stock market supercomputer to launch with glitches. So, I don't think that's
was
what.
No, I guess I missed that in the comedy section of today's today's news. That is such a farce.
I know.
It's insulting.
It is.
And we have just a bunch of news to report today that just tells you that there's so many real reasons for what you know, happened in December. What's going to be happening, you know, in the coming days, weeks, and months.
Yeah, and we're going to start with manufacturing growth. The first survey of December's economic data came out this morning, certainly with diminished results, where the U.S. manufacturer growth hit new lows. Reuters, from financial data firm IHS Market, showed that the U.S. Manufacturing Purchasers Managers Index was 53.8 in December, and that's falling almost 2 points from November. November's was 55.3. This is a 15-month low for this index. You have job creation also slowed to an 18-month low. Output and order books grew at the slowest rates for over a year, and optimism about the outlook slumped to its gloomiest for over 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, some of the weakness is due to capacity constraints, apparently, with producers again reporting widespread difficulties in finding suitable staff, as well as sourcing sufficient quantities of inputs. However, you know, the survey also revealed signs of slower demand growth from customers, as well as rising concern over the impact of tariffs. There you have three significant and explicit reasons for some of this uncertainty and volatility surrounding the markets. Just over two-thirds of manufacturers reported higher costs attributed to the rise in prices to tariffs. You know, manufacturers' confidence in business also slipped to the lowest level in nearly 2 years, with optimism at its lowest level since October 2016. You know, it looks like manufacturer optimism in general was hit by concern about the longevity of new business growth, which, if not dismal, certainly looks problematic at best.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking about and this is kind of off track here, but we're talking about the tariffs and about China, and a new deal with China is supposed to be shortly around the corner. But doesn't all that have to be passed through Congress? I mean, even the new NAFTA agreement really isn't ratified yet, is my understanding. And
no,
that won't
correct.
Be until this month sometime, and now the Republicans don't even have control. So,
well, yeah, if it's in the form of a treaty, I believe only the U.S. Senate will have a say in it. But I'm not sure if there are any specific provisions in the new trade treaty or treaties that would require approval by both houses, which...
So they are classified as treaties?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. It was, one of the criticisms that Trump had of the Obama administration was that, well, the Iran nuclear treaty, for example, was
right.
Not an official treaty that rose to the level of congressional advice and consent, and there were others as well. So I don't know if the glove is on the, you know, it's on the other hand, if it's going to, you know, if the same is going to hold true, or, you know, if they are going to rewrite this to make it much more difficult for future administrations to undo without, again, congressional approval.
So, I mean, but still, it has to be passed by something. Of course, if it's just the Senate, it's still, it would be able to go through there easy peasy. But I, for some reason, I think there was concerns with that new trade agreement with Mexico and Canada that it would have to go through Congress. And that was the big issue, whether it would be passed by them or not with the new Democrats coming on board. So, we'll do a little more digging around in that and see if we can't come up with some dates on that. But again, ladies and gentlemen, it's not all smooth sailing. And you have, of course, with the lower rates, Dave, you might see some change in housing. We saw the asking prices for homes are coming down as these sellers are facing the new reality. Interest rates are higher than they were a year ago. Potential buyers are now worried about the economy, so it looks more like a buyer's market according to this new report. So even though home prices are still higher than a year ago, they're still pulling back in most of the major markets. And when you look at the percent, the interest rate, what these potential buyers look at, that 10-year yield, so you might see some of those mortgage rates come down, soften a little bit. But I don't know if it's, you know, too late to make a difference, or if we might see a little bit of a bump in some of these numbers temporarily. I don't know. The rise in mortgage rates did dampen the buyer demand, slowed home price growth. The 30-year fixed rate loans were averaging about 4.9% during November. This was the highest since February 2011. So they might be softening here in a little bit, but temporarily.
Yeah, I mean, as we've been talking too, as listeners may recall, there's also more supply on the market these days. You know, as new listings come out, amid a slower sales pace. You know, last spring, more than half the nation's 50 largest housing markets were considered overvalued, of course, meaning that prices were at least 10% higher than their long-term, what was considered their long-term sustainable levels. In November, that share slipped to 44%. Since mortgage rates shot up in the fall, they've since fallen back. A lot of that in response to the major sell-off in the U.S. stock market and wider concerns over global economic growth, which we see slowing down from many metrics. The rate hit 4.61% on the last day, December 31st of 2018. Now, if recent declines in the stock market shake consumer confidence further, in the national economy, that is, we may see homeowners' perception of home value change and a subsequent buyer's market emerge this coming year.
The Federal Reserve, that's going to talk about rates again, is sort of in danger of losing control. At least that's how, according to the former chair of the Senate Banking Committee, sees it. Phil Graham, U.S. Senator from Texas, he argues that the Fed's attempt to normalize interest rate policy, while it also reduces the risk or the size of the securities it holds on its balance sheets, could go terribly wrong. He noted that the intensifying debate over whether the Fed should be raising interest rates, and as we know, the Fed has hiked its benchmark rate 4 times in 2018, and of course, Federal Chair Jerome Powell has repeatedly been criticized by the administration and colleagues for this policy tightening. And so doesn't Jerome Powell speak this week, the end of this week or the end of next week, I think? I heard.
Is that next week? I believe that's next week. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine the Fed's going to be doing anything. We'll talk about that in a moment. But, Graham wrote in this Wall Street Journal op-ed with a colleague of his, he says, this debate's occurring at the very moment the Fed, which is shackled by its bloated asset holdings and the resulting excess reserves of the banking system, has less ability to control interest rates than it has had in its entire 105-year history. The issue, he says, is the balancing act the Fed has to perform as it seeks to, quote, normalize policy from the extreme accommodation of the financial crisis and the years after. As we know, the Fed's both raising rates and reducing the bonds it holds on its balance sheet. And in 2018 ran into an issue where, the benchmark funds rate eventually matched the same level as the interest the Fed pays on the excess bank reserves. Graham did point out that, should the market rate that banks can make on loans exceed the level the Fed pays on reserves, it could result in an explosion in the money supply that would send inflation soaring. So, that's an interesting perspective, Melody.
Well, it is, but what just cracks me up, all these politicians and so forth, the Fed, as they were peddling money into the system to keep it going, to keep from collapsing. They were right along there, encouraging the creation of this problem. And now they, the Fed wants to correct it. Now it's like, no, you can't. I mean, they're just all for the sake of Wall Street.
Hypocrisy. I mean, it's funny, some of these guys like Graham, and I'm not sure that most of the others are any different. That when they're unshackled from, re-election, I guess, from a future campaign, then it's a tad of a different story than it was when they were overseeing the system that almost brought the entire world to its knees.
Yeah, I mean, he was right in there, with the he just contributed to the problem. It's like, and now it's just really is amazing. It's really irritating, and of course, let's guess who pays for this. Who's going to end up paying for their bad decisions, trying to keep the Wall Street going? That's in the banks.
Does it begin with 99%?
Yes, I think it does. I think it does. Investors, you know, we talked about interest rate hikes. There's investors that are betting that the interest rates are going to end in 2019 no higher than where they started. And that's really a sign of diminished confidence in the economy. The Fed funds futures, which investors use to bet on the direction of the Federal Reserve policy, today showed an 87% probability that policymakers will finish the year with interest rates at or below their current level. If it's below the current level, that means the market's probably going to drop another 3,000-5,000 points, because that means he's going to have to start cutting.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder about some of these future. I mean, you talk about collusion.
Yeah.
No, you know, it's a serious charge, obviously, but you know, it's just it certainly doesn't take an expert, much less a genius, to know that the economy and the paper markets are, you know, headed south. Now all of a sudden, these professional traders, the vast majority of whose pocketbooks depend on, to a large extent, or at least some extent, you know, the actions of the Fed, at least in terms of how their actions affect stock prices, you know, all of a sudden, you know, almost 9 out of 10 of them believe that the Fed's all of a sudden going to stop and then drop. I mean, you know, I mean, intuitively, that makes sense.
But we all know the Fed will.
The Fed can't help itself. Now, in this case, you know, it's certainly too early to say. I think that 87% will come down as the first quarter moves on. And as the Fed gets closer to that rate hiking decision, probably in March.
I think that 87% probability will stay the same, because they're betting that the Fed is going to be all data dependent. And if the data isn't supplying it, they're not going to raise it, and they're not, or they'll lower it.
Well, we'll see.
They're not going to increase it unless you think that they're going to continue to increase it.
I do.
You do?
Not immediately. But later.
Very interesting. Hey, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. We'll be right back.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 800-375-4188. Well, I'll tell you what, January 2nd has started out with lots of gold and silver buyers. Talking to some of my buyers, and we've seen it here at Discount Gold and Silver. Short-term sellout of products. We still lock them in and so forth and whatnot. But a lot of the maple leaves were being sold. The gold eagles are being sold out. Again, we're at that end of the year where product can be tight. But what it tells me is people are buying gold and silver. Big money is starting to move into gold and silver. And I was surprised to see as much activity going on today as we did coming back from a holiday weekend. Although I was also surprised at the numerous calls that were coming in yesterday, January 1st. I was surprised at the calls that I received on my answering machine on the 31st. You know, while everybody's out celebrating, you know, people are calling wanting to buy gold and silver. I can't remember a time in a very long time that actually happened on a long holiday weekend, particularly Christmas and New Year's. And it's very difficult to lock in prices when markets are closed, although we always have blowout of inventory at the end of the year for tax purposes and so forth. So, perhaps this was another reason today was so active as myself. You know, we're out there buying inventory because we blew it all out at the end of the year. So now we're replacing a lot of that inventory. So very active, and I expect it to continue throughout this year. So 800-375-4188. You know, I received an interesting email, Dave, from a customer. And, you know, we used to call it history of the world when, you know, people would want to know about confiscation. They want to know, well, where to save it. They wanted to know everything they needed to know about gold and silver. And I think we need to start touching on those a little more often than what we are. Because there's a lot of new buyers that are coming into the market also. They're not so seasoned anymore. They're new ones. They're because they know there's something going wrong. They know that this can't continue. The volatility that we saw at the end of the year, they do understand debt. They do understand that this thing isn't going to be held together. They see what's going on in D.C., whether you agree or disagree. It's the underlying I don't want to say emotion, Dave, but it's the underlying fundamental view of things are not good. That, you know, you have two groups that can't communicate, so things aren't going to get done. Things are going to happen, and who's there to make decisions? And so it will funnel down into the markets. So it's going to be a very volatile year. So people understand this, and we have new people coming into the market. And I think we need to address the history of the world situation. So we will start tackling that as our goal for 2019. Here's one of the goals from the administration: removing troops from Syria. Now we have 4 months to withdraw the 2,000 troops in Syria, backtracking from an order 2 weeks ago that the military to be pulled out within 30 days. President Trump confirmed on Twitter that troops would slowly be withdrawn, but complained that he got little credit for the move. Sums up after a fresh round of criticism from General Stanley McChrystal and John Kelly, the White House Chief of Staff, no longer, about the impulsive decision-making. And so we'll have to see where that leads. And I went, really was kind of funny though, to see all, I don't know if it's funny, I don't know what it is, you know, but I saw all the name calling about General Stanley McChrystal. I don't know anything about him. I don't know if, you know, he deserved the criticism or not. You know, it's just kind of interesting to enter in 2019.
It's off to a banging start. You know, during a surprise trip to Iraq last week, Trump privately told the commander of American forces in Iraq and Syria, Lieutenant General Paul LaCamera, that the military could have several months to complete a safe and orderly withdrawal. And on Sunday, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, in an on-again, off-again, on-again bromance, it appears, told reporters that a pause situation on the troop withdrawal was in effect by extending the timetable for withdrawal to several months. Now, the administration stuck to the president's commitment to untangle the U.S. from years-long military commitments. Melody.
Well, you know, you had Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, who resigned in protest over the decision of leaving Syria, had said that it would betray the Syrian Kurdish Arab allies that are on the ground. Military planners say they need about 120 days or 4 months to carry out a withdrawal that allows time to decide which equipment to move elsewhere in the region. And so it is, we'll have to see where it goes and if we do it. You know, I wasn't a fan of all these generals to begin with. I always thought a lot of these appointments to these offices all by generals was not a good thing. So in some degree, I'm not sorry to see them leave. However, it would be nice to see them replaced. And, you know, I do believe that some of these positions do need to have, you know, they do need to have someone in those positions, Dave, do they not?
Oh, most assuredly. Especially, I mean, Secretary of Defense, Joint Chiefs of Staff, you know, White House Chief of Staff. You know, in the deputy ranks, the critical for, you know, strategy, policy, on the ground operations. I'm not sure you can overstress that. Now, I'm not a fan whatsoever of wars, but when you commit our young men and women largely to conflicts abroad, you know, make sure they've got what they need to do their jobs safely and efficiently. Dangerous times for sure. A lot of conflicts. We'll talk about some more of them possibly later if we get to them. If not, we'll look to do them on Friday. The government shutdown, Melody, and its 12th day. It's going to test the new Congress's ability to govern. Tomorrow. You know, when the new Democratic House is sworn in and the new Congress, politically divided as it is, gets back to work on Thursday, its ability to govern is going to be tested right away as this partial government shutdown, is getting close to 2 weeks. House Democrats, who regained control of the chamber in last November's election, reportedly plan to put forward a package of 6 full-year spending plans that would fund most of the rest of the government through September. Separately, they're going to propose a short-term patch extending current funding through February 8th for the Homeland Security Department, which would give both sides more time to negotiate a settlement over funding for border security and presumably a wall. It'll be interesting. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, he's put the onus on a solution to the deadlock on Senate Democrats and President Trump. He says, you know, he's not going to put anything on the floor that the president hasn't publicly announced he will support. And Melody, I believe they're meeting, the leadership of the House and Senate are meeting in the White House as we speak.
Yes, they are, and I don't think anything's been much has been released as far as what's been going on in there and so forth. So, you know, real quick, and then we're going to move on so we get some of these covered before the end of the program. When government has shut down before, it was always a big to-do. This is the quietest. It's like no one really cares this time around. Well, you don't hear anybody complaining. Yes, it was through Christmas and
there are people complaining.
There
are people living paycheck to paycheck out there.
That's one of the risks. We all carry risk with our jobs. There was lots of people that are laid off across this country. You know, day in and day out. But I mean, the point is that the media they talk about it. They have their little counter on their lower left hand section. Oh, the government's been closed for how many days, minutes, and seconds, and so forth. But I mean, it's like, there's just like no urgency at all.
Well, and certainly to the policymakers, there don't appear to be.
Yeah, there's just like no urgency to, and it's really kind of bizarre. So, and again, I don't know how this affects our debt. You know, this is going to be debt, I believe, as I've always said, is still the single most important statistic that we're going to follow in 2019, Dave.
Yeah, quite simply, we believe that our nation's and world debt levels are the single most dangerous reality affecting our future. Listen to these statistics and remember them. I mean, our gross national debt, $21.9 trillion. And ticking up as we speak. That's almost $67,000 per citizen and $179,000 per taxpayer. Total mortgage debt. Well, he talks about that a lot. $15.4 trillion. Student loan debt, $1.6 trillion. Credit card debt, $1.1 trillion. All told, personal debt, $19.4 trillion. That's $59,000 plus per citizen. And then there's state government debt, $1.2 trillion. Local government debt, $1.9 trillion. State and local pension liabilities, $6.5 trillion. Total U.S. debt, $71.9 trillion. $219,000 per citizen, $855,000 per family. Oh, the average savings per family? Slightly less than $12,000. Translation, we're looking at multiple generations of families to even get close to, starting to reverse this trend. If you jump overseas and look at the top 10, the debt of the top 10 governments, including the U.S., almost $61 trillion. It's an average of 103% of those countries' GDP. Total world debt, this continues to astound me, $250 trillion. $250 trillion. Three times what it was just 20 years ago. Enough said. Simply not sustainable, period.
And when we think of all that debt and tied to the derivatives and the rest of it, I mean, it's just, yeah, you're right. I mean, people are just walking on very thin ice, the global system, very thin ice. And not sure what's going to crack it or when it's going to crack. But as you said, it is not sustainable. Let's finish out. We got a couple minutes, so I think we can finish out Brevity is Golden today. The 2019, the out and the in list.
Oh, my. Melody, give praise. 2018 is over, and it took about forever. Wildfires raged on. Kids marched for their lives. Mueller continued to investigate. Tillerson got dumped. Kavanaugh and Ford spoke. Kavanaugh was confirmed. The Queen of Soul and the Maverick of the Senate passed on. Sure, we got distracted. Humans almost always do. Plenty happened in the year of our Lord 2018, and we rapidly aged. Here's what's out and in 2019, at least to those culture kids at the Washington Post. Out, keep Portland weird. In, keep Crystal City weird. That's where a lot of defense contractors and other government agencies are, and apparently where Jeff Bezos considered to build his other Amazon site. Out, Jeff Flake. In, a concerned Mitt Romney.
That's the funniest.
I know. Out, delete Facebook again. In, delete Instagram again. Out, Super Bowl halftime show. In, Democratic primary debates.
Oh, no. You kidding me? now, let's repeat. Whose list is this?
The Washington Post. And I filtered. I filtered these. Out, Lyft for scooters. In, Uber for planes.
Uber?
Ooh, that's a tad bizarre. That's certainly one for the elites. Out, edited baby jeans, hopefully. Good. In, boot cut jeans. Here another appropriate one. Out, Trump International Hotel. In, the Des Moines Marriott. There comes the Iowa caucuses, Melody. Out, no comment from the special counsel's office. In, no comment from the special counsel's office. And let's jump ahead, and last but not least, out, stocks and bonds. In, gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. Melody, that is this week's Brevity in Golden. Happy New Year, everybody.
1-800-375-4188. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be returning tomorrow with Butch. Thank you, Dave. And until then, be safe. Good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.